You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Saul Gonzalez of KQED's The California Report, filling in today for Steve Chiatakis. Today is the day gardeners and landscape lovers across Southern California have been absolutely dreading. The region's Metropolitan Water District is asking 4 million of its customers to stop all outdoor watering for 2 weeks while crews repair a pipe. The MWD's ban comes as we already face drought restrictions and a scorching heat wave, which are stressing out plant life across the region. So why do this now? And what will our yards from the San Gabriel Valley to Long Beach look like in a couple of weeks if they get no water? KCRW reporter Kaylee Wells has some answers to those questions, and she joins me now in studio. Hey, Kaylee.
Hey, Saul.
So let's start with who should be worried right now about this outdoor watering ban. What cities are most affected?
Well, they're kind of all over the place. So let's start on the west side. We have Malibu, Topanga, Beverly Hills, and kind of all down the coast.
A lot of big landscaped yards there, right?
Oh, yeah. And there's also a lot of big yards in Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena up to the foothills. They're affected too.
Wow, no kidding. That is a huge geographic area already.
Oh, yeah. And we're not even done. So there's also a big area roughly from Montebello down to Long Beach. And then if we go inland, where, as you know, we just had a lot of triple-digit days over there, Pomona, Walnut, and Laverne, those places are affected too. And if you're not sure if this applies to you, we will link to a map of it on kcrw.com/greaterLA.
So in terms of day-to-day life, what does this exactly mean for 4 million people in the MWD service area?
It's kind of a pretty strict request. So there's no longer going to be these exemptions for drip irrigation or people growing food. They just want you not to water outdoors for 2 weeks. MWD says if you've got a tree or a shrub that's on the verge of dying, okay, you can hand water it. But the goal here is to just reuse as much of your indoor water as you can.
So the MWD says this is necessary to do now because, well, the culprit is this broken pipe or this pipe that's in need of repair and maintenance. Why did it have to be repaired now in the middle of a drought?
Sure. So, well, let me first start by explaining we've got these two main water sources that we import from. There's the State Water Project in Northern California and then the Colorado River. So the problem is with the pipe that brings in Colorado River water. It's almost a century old and it was leaking. And NWD's chief of operations, Brent Yamasaki, told me that they patched it while they built the replacement piece, which has worked fine. But
we don't want to live with that temporary patch. If it were to fail, it would be, now we would have an urgent emergency shutdown. No one would be ready. We would have to communicate with the public in a different way. And we'd have to mobilize all our equipment suddenly. And we wanted to avoid that. We want, even though this is an emergency shutdown and it's urgent, we wanted to still do it in a planned fashion. And so now that the piece of pipe is completed, we're ready to install it. Now, we did wait till after Labor Day. This piece was finished a few weeks ago, but we waited until after Labor Day, where the bulk of the summer has passed.
And okay, yes, maybe Labor Day is over, but you and I here in Southern California both know that the heat is far from over. So, I mean, just look outside right now. It's still pretty hot. People still need water.
So what are people supposed to do to at least keep some of their plants alive?
So I have a good list of ideas for you, but the biggest one in general is just to reuse the indoor water that you're already using.
Indoor water, like what? What I use in the kitchen? Like when I'm making pasta or what?
That's exactly right. So maybe you boil your pasta, you let it cool, and then you pour it on your plants. MWD recommended a few others too. Here's Krista Guerrero. She is their water efficiency specialist.
If you could put a bucket or a pitcher in your shower while it's warming up, and then take that water and use it to water your plants on your balcony or within your home.
A couple other ideas she gave, soapy water or water with food bits in it. That's not going to hurt your plants for a couple weeks. If you're really worried about the soap, you could get some organic soap and they're going to be just fine. And then gardening expert Christy Wilhelmi gave me a good idea for those who have pools.
We have a hot tub, and every once in a while, you're supposed to empty the hot tub, clean it out, and fill it up again. And given that, you know, we're in a drought and we don't want to waste any water, we let our hot tub water cool. We let the chlorine evaporate out of it. And then we filled our rain barrels with that hot tub water. And I've been watering the garden for months with that.
So that's pretty cool. And by the way, there is a rebate for rain barrels if you still need those.
Okay, that's great information about finding water from sources inside the house. What about outside? What can you do with your lawn or plants that are already there?
So something I actually didn't know about lawn, stop mowing your grass and don't mow it for the next 2 weeks because the longer the blades are, the more they retain moisture. Around your trees, around your bushes, put down lots of mulch, like several inches deep. That also retains water. And if you still can't find enough water, Guerrero with MWD had some tips about how to triage what water you do have.
Your mature trees, particularly any natives that you have, if you have a native tree, native plants, those are going to survive. Your lawn is going to yellow, but it will recover when normal watering resumes. Really, what I would concentrate on are your flowers, smaller shrubs. Those are the ones that you're going to want to focus that water that you're bringing from inside your house. You're going to want to focus on those plants.
Also, something else I heard from a few other gardeners, bed sheets. Pull them out, put them on top of your plants, shade cloths, anything to give them some temporary relief. The sort of downside is with younger plants or water-loving plants, it's probably better to think not about how to keep them alive, but maybe more about how to plan better next time, because you might have to replace those.
And what does planning for the next time look like?
Well, part of the problem, a lot of people actually overwater their plants, so they've never really had to learn how to grow really deep roots to search for water. So you could prep them by watering them less. That's what Wilhelmi told me.
I was driving along Highland Avenue and looked around and just saw fried plants, bushes, like perennial bushes and grasses just burnt to a crisp. And I thought, oh, they've been watering probably way too much because those bushes, had they been watered once a week or once every 2 weeks deeply, they wouldn't be suffering right now.
And also, if you've decided that now's the time to rip up your lawn and replace it maybe with some growing vegetables, she says it's time to plant the fall crops late next month. So go out and get your lettuces, your tender herbs, and broccoli and onions and go to town.
All right, Kaylee. You know, human beings being human beings, there are going to be some people out there who just ignore the ban, even if they know about it for outdoor watering. What happens to them if they just keep on irrigating away?
Well, nothing. Oh. It's voluntary. While the Colorado River source is down, we're just pulling from our other source instead, the State Water Project, which is in Northern California. And here's MWD's Brent Yamasaki again, trying to explain why you should try and follow this rule anyway.
We've been leaning on them very hard for the last 3 years of this historic drought. And so every bit of it that we can conserve is just that much better for next year in case it's also dry. You know, it's like your bank balance, your savings balance is getting low and you've got to be really careful about how you spend it.
So yes, you will turn on the faucet and water will keep coming out. But if you use it all up now on your plants, the other mandatory restrictions could last longer or maybe be more strict next summer.
You know, I think about Southern California cities that are so synonymous with their lawns and their lush landscaping. Beverly Hills, I'm talking about you. Pasadena, I'm talking about you. And there are others. What about them?
I actually spoke to city officials from both Pasadena and Beverly Hills. Pasadena said they have cut back their watering to once per week, and they are going to keep doing that. Beverly Hills, completely going to stop watering. Fountains aren't going to run. Their grass medians will go dry. The city said some residents have expressed concern about the outdoor landscaping, but the city says they're just going to do their best and they'll replant anything that doesn't make it.
I bet, you know, because so much of who a lot of people are is really tied up in their landscaping, right? And what their front yard and backyard looks like.
Especially here in Southern California.
Yeah. All right. Only time and the drought will tell. And we've got more information for you at kcrw.com/greaterLA. KCRW's Kaylee Wells, thanks so much for joining us. And thanks so much for all the great information.
Absolutely, Saul. Thank you.
Introducing the KCRW Donation Car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back with more Greater LA, I'm Saul Gonzalez. Let's turn now to politics. With the Labor Day holiday weekend now in the rearview mirror, attention focuses in earnest on the November elections, and there will be so much to vote on. We're talking congressional races, statewide propositions, local ballot measures, and who will become the next mayor of Los Angeles. Will it be real estate mogul Rick Caruso or Congresswoman Karen Bass? Here to talk about the mayoral race is Rafe Sonenshein. He's the executive director of the Pat Brown Institute of Public Affairs at Cal State Los Angeles. Hey, Rafe.
Good to be with you, Saul.
All right, so let's just jump into the mayoral race, shall we? We've seen some big changes in the polls with Bass seemingly pulling ahead despite Caruso's wealth. What's going on here? What's the state of play as you look at it right now?
Well, at this point, you'd rather be sitting where Karen Bass is than where Rick Caruso is. It's going in her direction, not by a huge amount, but according to the latest poll, there haven't been many published polls. She's, you know, in double-digit lead. In the primary, she was ahead by about 7. But even so, her position is very good, and it could get better. And put another way, Caruso really is going to have to change the chemistry of the race, turn that ship so it's going in a different direction to overtake her. He certainly has a chance. He's got the money for it, but it's a less welcoming atmosphere in November than it was in the June primary.
So for Caruso, does turning that ship, as you put it, does it just mean spending more money, or is it spending more money and something else? And what would that something else be?
Well, it's really turning people's attention because he really made great use of his money in the primary. In fact, he was a rocket ship rising up with money to get his name known and to get him focused on the most popular local issues to run against Karen Bass with, which were homelessness and the perceptions of increased crime. Now he has to consider the fact that those local issues may not be the sole dominating issues in November. And he's facing an environment in the first contested LA mayor's race, indeed the first LA mayor's race in an even numbered year, which means partisan issues, ideological issues, national and state issues may play as big a role as local issues like homelessness and crime. And as long as that's true, that's going to be a barrier for him.
Well, when you say that, I immediately think of abortion. And just to be clear, Rick Caruso says that he is pro-choice, but he's also given to groups in the past that have been anti-abortion. How big of a role do you think that could play in the race?
It kind of doesn't matter, Saul. I mean, basically, the overturning of Roe versus Wade is one of the most cataclysmic political events of modern times. Is that too strong for you? I think it's the truth. It's hitting everything. It's hitting national politics, state politics, and it will hit local politics because it will bring people to the polls. And often what happens in a race is something else brings people to the polls. It has nothing to do with the race itself, but they stay around to vote for the candidate they consider closer to their point of view. There will be a state constitutional amendment on the ballot enshrining reproductive rights. That's going to draw a lot of people to the polls. And I think it's a very difficult time to be the less Democratic candidate in a two-person race.
And just a reality check about the power of a Los Angeles mayor. I mean, the candidates are going to be making a lot of promises. Each one of them wants to expand the LAPD. They're talking about building thousands of more units of housing for the homeless. Can a mayor get that stuff done, really, with the powers that he or she has?
Well, here's the difficulty of the homelessness issue. It's not like filling potholes. It's not like increasing or decreasing the size of the police department. The city of LA has a huge role in this, but if it doesn't have the cooperation and alliance with the county of LA and other incorporated cities in LA County, support from the state and federal government, they can't do it by themselves. So the first thing this new mayor is going to have to do is level with people that however good their ideas are, they cannot do this by themselves. There's just too much, especially overlap between the city and county on this issue. And I hope they address that sooner rather than later.
But it's not in the interest of a mayoral candidate to draw attention to what he or she can't do, right? I mean, they're not going to do that.
Yeah, but, and you know, Saul, that used to work with school board politics, but the mayor has no power over the schools, but would always say they're going to make sure everybody has a first-class education. And people kind of don't pursue it so much after they get elected. It doesn't become a big thing. Homelessness is on everybody's mind. They are looking for a solution here. And it is better to level with people early rather than late and say, I issue a challenge to all my partners out there in government in Southern California. It's a welcoming challenge, but let's see how we can make this work. Here's the power we'll give up if you'll give up a little bit. That's the conversation that's going to happen. And it has not been happening enough on the homelessness issue. And it matters to the voters. The voters are watching and they're skeptical about great ideas. Great ideas on paper? I don't know. That's what the voters are going to say.
All right. That is Rafe Sonenshine. He is the executive director of the Pat Brown Institute of Public Affairs at Cal State Los Angeles. Rafe, thanks so much for joining us on Greater LA.
It was my pleasure.
Moving on now with Greater LA, I'm Saul Gonzalez. Let's turn our attention to the east, to the Inland Empire. Riverside and San Bernardino counties used to be known for their vast citrus groves and agricultural way of life. In more recent years, the Inland Empire has cultivated new kinds of crops, suburban subdivisions, and massive warehouses and logistics centers. But there are less obvious changes happening in this part of Southern California. The Inland Empire is increasingly a magnet for people of color leaving cities like LA and Long Beach for what some say is a quieter and more affordable life. Los Angeles Times reporter Tyrone Beeson talked to people about why this is happening for his ongoing series, My Country. It explores the gap between America's ideals and its history of injustice. Thanks so much for joining us, Tyrone.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So, you know, the Inland Empire has been a fast-growing region for a long time. What are the contributions of people of color to this growth?
I knew that people of color had been migrating over decades, really, into the Inland Empire, but it seems to have reached a critical mass lately, and I wanted to understand that, how it shapes the culture when new people arrive. What I'm finding is that, you know, people of color have moved out there for affordability, yes, but there's something else that you almost can't measure, but that's something that I think a lot of us in America are feeling right now, the sense of unease. And what people have found is quiet, peace, even with all the traffic, even with all the growth, there's something about this particular part of Southern California that feels removed from maybe the craziness that we associate with the big cities.
Well, you talked to a lot of people about this out there, and they included Fatima Nelson. She's a community engagement specialist at UC Riverside, and here she is explaining why she made the move.
Then the more that I would kind of come and visit the area, the more I said, you know what, it's really beautiful out here. I would call in and say, I'm on my way back from, you know, seeing this one house, and it's like so country out here, you'd never believe it. He was like, country? Are you sure that's what we want? Country? And I'm like, no, but in a good way. Like, you know, it's just slower. It's slower. And the other thing I'm going to be frank about is I saw a lot of people of color here.
So, Tyrone, she talks about a slower way of life, a more peaceful way of life. Did you hear a lot of the same thing from other people?
Exactly the same thing. And that's what was so striking. Everyone said that. After, you know, a few years of the pandemic, of this incredible sort of national reckoning over racism, for people of color to be able to have a moment, a little breathing room, just to be themselves and be comfortable in their own skin. I think it's everything for folks like Fatima and the others that I spoke to.
Well, you touched on this earlier, but the Inland Empire has historically been a pretty conservative place. It has its history of racist incidents and segregation. How do people of color who are newly arrived in the region feel about that history? And how might they change the place long term?
The Inland Empire does come with a lot of baggage. I mean, if you think about the city of Fontana, for example, it was a hotbed for the SoCal chapter of the KKK. And up until the 1980s, they would march from the steps of City Hall, you know, through the street. Certainly folks like Fatima and others I spoke to understand that they are going into a region where there's a history of white supremacy and racism. And she alluded to it herself. She called it the country. What she means is, it's a place that might not be so welcoming to Black folks like her. And because it is so difficult to put down roots in Southern California, to own a home with a yard in front and back and for your kids to play, they will make that bet that they can be in that place and shape it for themselves. It doesn't mean that all the problems go away, but what they've found is a kind of peace and a security that runs right alongside the history.
And what about the economic aspects to this migration? I mean, people are moving there as well for a more affordable quality of life. Are they also finding the jobs, particularly in this growing logistics industry that we read and hear so much about?
So many of our goods come through this region, and people have to work at those warehouses. And it's not all fun and games. You know, Amazon workers just walked off the job recently. I interviewed a gentleman who's worked in a number of locations, and he talked about worker exploitation, the feeling of being expendable. There's also environmental concerns. You know, activists have long been worried about the impact of all the trucks and warehouses and how they might pollute the air. So it's kind of a, to me, a mixed picture. It is a haven for a lot of people, but it comes with a number of crises that local officials are having to address.
And just finally, do you think that the things that attract people to the Inland Empire stay that way? Or do or does the migration of new people into this part of California, or Southern California, change things to a point where more people don't want to move there?
Obviously, it must be great for those who are able to live in the Inland Empire and work closer to where they live. There are people who love the peace and quiet, but with density, with growth, come noise, come pollution, come the other stresses of daily life. And you will find people who are stressed out there, just as they are maybe in LA. And so that balance could tip very easily. And I think that's the conversation that local officials are having with activists and residents right now, is how to sustain the things that make the Inland Empire appealing. The other thing is affordability. Rents and housing prices are going up there as they are in other parts of Southern California. Maybe not as much, but it, you know, it's still an affordable region, but not nearly the way it was several years ago. So these are all things to pay attention to, because popularity does bring problems. It does bring complications.
Yeah. All right. That is Los Angeles Times reporter Tyrone Beeson. Tyrone, thanks so much for joining us on Greater LA.
It was really great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
And that's our show. Tomorrow, the real estate market is finally easing up a bit. But interest rates are rising, so what does that mean for people trying to buy their first home? Plus, did you know there are all kinds of things you can check out from LA's public libraries beyond books? I'm talking musical instruments and power tools. That's tomorrow on Greater LA. Have a question for us or a story idea? Well, then go to kcrw.com/AskGreaterLA and share your thoughts. And while you're there, subscribe to the podcast too, all at kcrw.com/GLA. Who made this show happen? Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Sonia Geis, Sue Margulies, Ray Guarna, Amy Taw, and Holly Adams. I'm Saul Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us, and talk soon.